the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello and welcome. This is your host, Athena Melville. Welcome to this November 2018 edition of Education Now. In this edition, I'm so delighted to welcome Gay Adelman. Gay is an advocate and activist and mother of two who started Save Our Schools Kentucky as an effort to stop charter schools. Welcome, Gay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. I was just so impressed by your article for the publication Forward Kentucky, titled Beware ALEC-Backed Legislators Running for Re-Election in Kentucky.
Thank you.
Yeah, did you get a lot of good feedback about that article?
We did. I heard from the publisher that it was one of the most shared articles for the last 30 days, which is good news because we needed to make sure that people around the state were aware of these legislators that were backed by and funded by the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Yeah. Well, when I was looking for someone to speak about the conference that was held in Kentucky on October 18th, and Donna and another teacher that I've had on the program suggested that I contact you, and I was oh so excited. And then when you said yes, I really was excited, and I just loved everything I've been reading and looking at the things that you post on Facebook is just amazing. So can you tell me and our listeners about the NEA rally that took place on October 18th in Kentucky?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The rally was actually sponsored by Save Our Schools Kentucky. We're just a grassroots organization that is run by parents and teachers and students here at the local level. And when we found out that Diane Ravitch was going to be holding the NPE conference in Indianapolis that October 20th and 21st weekend, we reached out to Diane, and she had already told us that she had stopped traveling once she reached a certain birthday milestone. But we reached out to her and explained to her that Louisville, Kentucky is really just across the river and a couple hours away, but across the river in Indiana from where we are. And we promised that if she would come to Louisville, Kentucky, we would drive her to the conference in Indiana. And she agreed. So we were very excited to have her coming to town. And so then everything kind of evolved around her appearance. She invited G2 Brown to also come, and G2 is with Journey for Justice. He's the national director for Journey for Justice, and he recently held, it's been about 3 years, I guess, but he held a hunger strike in South Chicago to prevent the closing of a school there.
Yes, I remember that. Would you say his name again so that our listeners
G2?
Can...
G2? Absolutely. It's G2 Brown.
D2?
J-I-T-U. And it sounds like the letter G and the number 2, but it's spelled J-I-T-U.
J-I-T-U Brown. And
yes,
his hunger strike there. I remember that. I remember talking to Philip Cantor about that. That was remarkable.
It was. It was 34 days. Can you imagine going 34 days without eating and really without even leaving the school? Like, they were on site. There were 12 of them total. And they stayed. And throughout the negotiations, I think at one point the state said, okay, fine, or the district said, we won't shut it down. We'll just turn it into a charter school. But that was worse. You know, that's not a solution. So they continued their hunger strike until they were successful. And not only did they prevent the school from being closed, but they were able to get $16 million in additional funding, and it's now an arts magnet in South Chicago. So a lot of good came from their efforts, but it's unfortunate that we have to wait until the predators are right here at our door before the community gets mobilized. And so that's one of the things here in Louisville that I hoped the message that we took away from that was, let's not wait until we have to pose a 34-day hunger strike to prevent the closing of one of our valuable schools that serves our higher needs populations in our urban districts, but let's prevent this from happening in the first place. So
right. Yeah,
that was a really great, well-received event. And we also had Sue Legg with the League of Women Voters, and she spoke to our audience members.
And would you spell her name for us, too?
Yes, sure. It's Sue Legg, L-E-G-G.
Sue Legg.
And she's with the League of Women Voters in Florida, and she has been involved in the testing side of things prior to speaking out against the privatization movement. And she talked about the 600 and some odd charter schools that have opened up in Florida and the ways that they've been holding them accountable and suing the legislators as well as the companies that have been pushing this privatization agenda. And they've had some success. They were able to get something removed from the ballot this last election because of the ambiguity to the language that was being used. And, they're starting to close. I believe she said they're starting to close more charters than are being opened, which is great news. That's another distinction I think that these other states have that separate Kentucky from other states, is everything is happening in such rapid fire succession here in Kentucky that we can see, we can connect the dots, and we can actually see who these players are and what they're up to. Whereas Florida just kind of sneaked up on them and has happened over a longer span of time.
Right.
The community members aren't really able to see the cause and effect. And, you know, there's so much rhetoric about failing schools and high stakes testing and the perpetuation of the false narrative that they're able to get away with it in markets where they've taken their time. But I think they got a little too greedy and a little too aggressive here in Kentucky, and they're showing their hand a little too quickly. And we're resisting. We're pushing back. And even though we passed a charter school bill here in 2017, the charter school law, the bill passed and became law, but they have not been able to get permanent funding yet. So in the 2018 session, voters pushed back on their legislators and said, no to the funding. And we've removed some of these legislators from office as a result of this. And in fact, two of the 15 ALEC-backed legislators that were in the article that you mentioned before were voted out of office in November, on November 6th. So that was good news. We're
it
making
was,
progress.
And I'm sure that a lot of it had to do with that amazing article.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. It's really a great article. I encourage everyone to read it.
Thank you. Amazingly, one of the candidates that did get displaced, his opponent beat him by one vote.
Wow.
So you could say that if just one person in that particular community read my article, then yeah, we did make a difference there.
That's right. That's right.
He won by one vote.
Don't ever
let anybody tell you your vote doesn't count.
Yeah, don't ever let anybody tell you your vote doesn't count. I totally agree
Absolutely.
With you.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's just amazing what you're doing. And I think I shared with you today that they say that at charter schools, have a life expectancy of about 13 years.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's nothing.
But in those
13 years, they just suck all the money
exactly.
out of the system. And all those children and families suffer.
They really do.
I know that, I had this question: are the charter schools that you're trying to stop chain charter schools? And in conversations with you in the past, I realized that you probably didn't know why charter schools started in the first place.
Well, I have done the research since, when this first started happening to us. The charters that were coming to town most likely were the chain charter schools.
That's right.
As we investigated, and even as we spoke with people in the African-American community, for example, who do favor charter schools, We started to understand that the vision of the charter schools they would like to see are not the same types of charter schools that we're going to be getting under this type of legislation, this predatory legislation. So
right.
I do know a little bit about the history and the good types of charters that exist, but unfortunately when you open up the floodgate for the good guys, the bad guys with more power and money manage to be the ones that push their way through, and
that's
then the
right.
good guys still get left out in the cold.
That's right. That's exactly how it is, because, you know, when it all started, it was sort of an innovation to have a smaller class size and to have parents more involved in choosing the kind of philosophy of education that would be used. And, you know, it was sort of this compact between parents and teachers and a smaller school. And so, you know, that with the best intentions. And I think I told you that here in California, I think I've mentioned it to you in conversations or news before, that we have some of these charter schools that were started by parents and teachers, and they really are nice. They're really nice. They serve a pool of children whose families can be very involved. And also here in California, there's a mandate that a student must attend every meeting, every board meeting, and then report back to their class about the board meeting. And so that's another way that they get students involved. But unfortunately, right. these chain charter schools just took off. They just took off
yeah.
here in California. I think, you know, like there's these charter schools called Green Dot. Oh, they're just terrible. And then there is one that's actually out of Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And you know, where they are in these communities where a lot of the parents don't speak English, or they don't speak it very well, and they don't read English. And so they don't know. Or in communities where high poverty, and where parents really don't have the time, they're, you know, working two jobs to really research this. And so,
yep.
you know, that's where they're gaining control and power in more of the
right.
bigger cities and in areas of poverty. And I know that's a really big problem. And now with Betsy DeVos as the head of, yeah, isn't she something? You know, the head of
she is. Of
education in this country, it's just gotten worse. And
she's tied to ALEC, you know, and
oh,
all
yes,
of those billionaire elite. Yep.
Yes, she is tied to ALEC. And, you know, and ALEC is tied to Nazi Germany, and which
yes.
a lot of people don't know. You know, they just
nope.
need to do the research. And also Bear Aspirin.
The Koch brothers.
Yeah, the Koch
oh,
brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bear Aspirin is also connected to Nazi Germany. So there is
wow.
so much terrible, so many terrible things happening
yeah.
in our country right now. It's a time for parents to be informed, even though they may not have a lot of time.
Right.
They really do need to be informed. This all started in 1980 with President Reagan and with Proposition 13, which took money away from property taxes, which was all going to education. And at that time in California, education was free, higher education. Everyone could go to school free. We had the best schools in America except for New York. And everybody from all the other countries were coming here to get their credentials, and they still do, and they say, we learned it all in America, so why are your schools failing? Well, because we took that money away from public schools that
yep.
was, and that Proposition 13 that happened here in California, it just spread all over the country. And so, you know, and then a lot of people had stopped having children, you know, so they didn't see the importance of education. They thought, oh, well, it's more important that my parents don't have to pay such high taxes so they don't have
right.
to move out of their homes. But then their parents move out of their homes and go to these places where they're being taken care of anyway. And, you know, and I wanted to scream at them, because many of them are my generations. Don't you realize
right.
that, you know, your education was free and you got an excellent one, and now you don't care about education for
right.
others? I mean, where
right.
where is your sense of morality? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and good schools mean higher property values, which mean higher taxes, but that's okay because we still have higher property values. Like your house is worth more if you're paying more in taxes. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Invest in your schools.
Yeah,
it's important to have good schools in your community.
Yes, it
regardless
is.
If you personally have kids in school or not.
Right, and the other argument that people throw at me a lot of times is like, well, why are they having these children? Why don't they just stop having children? Why don't you know? Why are they having these kids? And you just like, I mean, or the religious argument, so many of the evangelicals. Favor charter schools, and they vote against Medicare and Medi-Cal, and I always want to say, why don't you care about the ones that are here? I mean, you don't want there to be abortion, but you don't care about the children that are here.
They've proven to me that they don't really care about the kids. Our own governor here in Kentucky cut funding to a program that funds our schools for pregnant and new mothers. And so if you don't want our children having abortions, our teenage moms having abortions, but you cut the programs that make sure that they have education and access to childcare, then how are you really demonstrating that you want them to keep that child? You're not. You just cut our programs. And so now our school district, of course, is still keeping this school open. So we're having to fund it out of textbooks and facilities and those things start to suffer because we're not going to just shut down the school simply because the state decided not to fund it anymore. We still got to find the money some other way.
Yeah, well,
so
thank goodness.
It's hypocritical. They don't really care.
Yeah, they are hypocrites, and it's really wonderful that there are people like you who do and who are willing to work so hard for your schools. Well, now let's talk about the past midterm election. How did things go in Kentucky?
You know, we had a mixed bag here in Kentucky. Louisville and Lexington are our two urban districts, and we did very well in our urban districts where we have a diverse population and it leans much bluer. The other ALEC legislator that was voted out that I mentioned earlier is here in Louisville, and he was actually one of the lead architects behind the charter school bill, the first bill that was introduced in 2017. He sponsored, and he has been directly tied to not only to ALEC but also to other organizations that have been here in Kentucky undermining public education since 2003. So we've got an organization here called the Bluegrass Institute for Public Policy Solutions, and it's funded by State Policy Network, which is a Koch-backed organization. And the founder of it has been tied to this legislator that we just voted out. So he was replaced by a teacher. You could not ask for a better solution than getting rid of ALEC and replacing him with a teacher. So that was our big win here in Louisville. But across the state, we got rid of four legislators who had voted for the charter school bill in 2017. And so we almost took back, right now we have supermajority House, Senate, and governor that are all Republican. And not that it's necessarily a partisan issue because it depends on where you are in the country, but everyone who voted for the charter school bill here in Kentucky was a Republican. And so having that supermajority our governor also being backed by ALEC really was harmful to us because we had no checks and balances. We had no pause. We had no opportunity to even hit the brakes and say, wait, is this what's really best for our community? And these bills were just passing left and right. In fact, that first week of session in 2017, there were seven harmful bills, four of which had ties back to ALEC, including right to work and the repeal of prevailing wage. And that's the same year that the charter school bill came through, but the charter school bill, the community was more awake when they were trying to cram that one through, so it actually didn't pass until the very last day of session. So, but it still did pass, and they're still continuing to push their agenda. So the fact that we lost, that we had four of those charter school voters pushed off, and we almost got back Democratic control of the House, or back to where it's not supermajority, we're still, I think, one seat away. Maybe by 2020 we can get better control of everything, but at least we're slowing it down, and I think the community is continuing to wake up. And now we have to work on our rural communities. Now we have to help voters that are single issue voters in particular, especially on issues like gay marriage and abortion. Like, they can't vote for a Democrat, even though Democrats are the ones that are protecting their public schools right now, because they feel so strongly about these other issues. And so we have to really help them understand that these may not even be issues that can be decided at the state level. So you're wasting your vote if you're worried about gay marriage or abortion, when right here under our noses, our public schools are being destroyed. We have to focus on what we have the ability to take immediate control over.
Very good.
And so
logic.
We've got to hit the road. Yeah, we've got to hit the road and get out into those rural communities.
Yeah, excellent logic. Just really excellent logic, Gay. You're a bundle of information and excellent reasoning. And I'm just delighted that there are people like you fighting for public education. It really makes a big difference. How do you feel about the midterm elections? Just nationally.
Nationally, I'm inspired. I loved what I saw happening in Arizona. You know, they stopped that Proposition 305.
Right.
In several other states, I saw some good news stories. So I think, Kentucky is still behind the curve when it comes to this learning process. But I really do think that the tide is starting to turn. And, between what's happening nationally as well as what's happening locally, and also the national scene with the Democrats taking back control of the House, I think there's going to be a lot more questioning of who's behind all of this, and a lot more transparency and accountability at the national level, including Betsy DeVos. And I'm really inspired that nationally we should be able to start connecting the dots and seeing what we have in common with these other states, and potentially reversing this trend once and for all.
Yes, I think it's happening too. I think a great awakening is happening. And I think that it really is a blue wave. But these tsunami, these big blue waves, they move slowly because they're huge.
They do.
Because they're huge. And so, it's still, the wave is still happening. And I am just so impressed with the number of women who run, and women of color. Gay and lesbian, a woman and a man, and people of Native Americans, Islamic, people who come from an Islamic tradition. I mean, mm-hmm. I just feel like the nation was letting the current administration know. They just punched them in the nose, and they're doing everything they can to slow down the process of this wave by saying that they don't want that recount in Florida. Oh, let it be the way that it is. No. They need to count every vote. And the same in Georgia.
That's right.
The same in Georgia. Yes. So, it's still moving. It's still moving. And I have great hopes for it all. And also the teachers, there was something like 10 black judges were elected in Oklahoma.
Sweet.
I mean, that's amazing. That's just amazing. So I think that we are waking up. I think you're right on about that. Well, now I'd like you to talk to me and talk to our listeners about Dear JCPS.
Okay. Well, JCPS stands for Jefferson County Public Schools, which is the largest district here in Kentucky. We have 101,000 students. And my experience, my journey, was as a parent at one of the lowest performing schools in the state. It was called a priority school. And when I, as a parent, simply tried to help them market, because I felt like if we could recruit, we're a district of choice here in Louisville. So we already have magnets and choices. We didn't, again, that's another reason why we don't need charters here, is because we already, I live in the east part of town, but I my son chose a school in the West End because it had an aviation magnet and he wanted to fly planes. And so what an amazing opportunity for him. And when we saw what a great program it was and we started, my background is marketing. So my journey was to, my journey was to try to use my experience to benefit the school. And I wanted to help them market because I felt like if we could recruit more students who could score well on tests, then we could help them get out of their priority status rut that they were in. Because what happens here in Kentucky too is if you don't change your scores in a 3 to 4 year time frame, then the state comes in and does something drastic. Every 3 or 4 years, they're coming in and replacing all of the staff or replacing the principal or, you know, doing some kind of change to the curriculum model or, you know, and it's drastic. And that's not helpful to students that are coming in that are high poverty, high trauma, special needs. You know, the population that this school was serving needed to be handled delicately, not with drastic change every 3 to 4 years. So I was trying to help them grow and market and improve their outcomes, and I was met with resistance every step of the way. And eventually, I realized that this, something just didn't seem right about this. And now that I kind of have 2020 hindsight, 2020 vision, I look back on it and realize that they saw charter schools were coming. They wanted to leave this school out there as a sacrificial lamb, because when the charter schools get here, let them take these low-performing schools out of their portfolio, basically. And because there's a dynamic where you can just move the kids around, it's a shell game. So, you know, that's what they were doing every 3 to 4 years, is just shifting the population dynamic instead of actually doing what these our most vulnerable kids needed, which was truly investing in things that were going to help them be successful, such as smaller class sizes and interventions and supports and the resources. And we don't even have textbooks at my son's school. So, like, there are some really common sense things that they could be doing, but instead they wanted to just continue to sweep things under the rug. And so we formed an organization called Dear JCPS, kind of like Dear John. Mm-hmm. Like, we were breaking up with the district, and yes, we started speaking at board meetings to try to help our board members make better decisions ahead of time. Because what we found is our board members, who were democratically elected, we have a democratically elected school board, and our board members truly are there for the right reasons, for the most part. Every once in a while, we'll get somebody who's Koch-funded or ALEC-funded, but you can usually tell who those people are. And they were being lied to by our administration. And so when we started speaking at the board meetings, we wanted to let them know that what the administration was telling them was not accurate. Because after my son's first year at the academy at Shawnee, our principal, who was dynamic and was doing a fantastic job, was actually forced to resign because basically he hadn't solved poverty in the 4 years he had been there. So we started speaking at the board meetings, and when they held these community forums, even though we didn't have a principal in the building, they held these community forums and then went back to the administration and said, or back to the board, the administration went back to the board and said, we held these community forums and everyone's in favor of this new plan. And myself and another parent were like, what meeting were they at? Because nobody was in favor of this new plan. So that's when we started speaking and letting them know that we needed a principal in place who could be an advocate for these students instead of just having the administration from their ivory tower come in and present another new plan every 3 to 4 years. So that was the beginning of our organization. And since then, we've been around since 2015. And after that time, we were able to get board members replaced. And then that new board was able to replace our superintendent. And so now we actually have, for the first time in decades, we actually have a superintendent who has been part of our system, who's an authentic, homegrown, if you will, dynamic turnaround principal for his previous schools. And now he's our superintendent. And he knows our history. He knows our people. He knows where we've come from and where we need to go. It's really a complicated district. We have busing with a very complex and storied history. And so it's really important that somebody who comes in and takes the lead knows that history, because you can do so much more harm than good if you break something without understanding why we have it in place in the first place.
Yes.
So I'm optimistic at the local level that we're finally moving things in the right direction. But now we've got these charlatans in power at the state level. And so that's when we shifted our focus from Dear JCPS to Save Our Schools Kentucky, and have been working with the legislature these past 2 years to try to make sure that our elected officials actually understand who's behind the privatization movement, and so they can make better choices too.
Yeah, I just hope, I wish you every success. I really do. I've always wondered why they don't go to the research. Because with the re if they went to the research, they'd find out in terms of class size, when you go beyond 1 to 15 or 1 to 17, retention drops by 70%.
Wow.
70%. You know, just knowing that, and then
Yeah.
and how much space, you need to have 25 square feet per child. That's
Wow.
what you have to have if you're a private school. That's the law. So
Right.
why isn't
Right.
it the same in a public school?
Right.
And movement, movement is linked to brain development. We've had
Absolutely.
that research out for decades. And they don't look at that at all. They do not look at that at all. And it's
Right.
maddening. It's maddening to me that they
It really
don't.
is.
Yeah.
It really is. Well, a lot of them don't have experience in that. They don't send their own kids to public schools. So they seem to think that they know what's best for others, but yet they would never allow these things to happen to their own children. They would not
Right.
allow the amount of high-stakes testing that we subject our kids to
Right.
in their
Well,
private schools.
right. Yeah, like Bill Gates. I mean,
Right.
his
All
failed
that screen
his
time.
yeah, his failed attempt. His failed attempt, and now they're talking about having kindergartners at the screen. When they
Yes.
should be outside, jumping around and moving around and climbing
Right.
and playing, and
Yeah.
pretending and
And
dress up.
interacting and social
Yes.
skill development and
Right,
yes.
and the arts are, they're considered a frill instead of essential,
Right.
and they are essential, and they don't ever have, like, Jonathan Cazale. I mean, people who are, great thinkers in child growth and development, they never have those people speak up. They never have them on PBS or NPR. Oh, but they have the Koch brothers, and they have,
Right.
because they give them money. And
Right.
so, our children are much more valuable than that. And which is, I took my children out of public school in 1980 when Ronald Reagan came in, because they devastated our public schools, and I homeschooled. I had my Montessori, education, and then other people wanted to join us, and we moved up here to Mendocino County, where we were going to retire originally, and we had this school, and it was just immensely successful, and I'm so glad I did it. And even the superintendent of schools up here in Mendocino County, if people would call him and say, "Well, what's the best school?" He would say, "Oh, Melville Montessori School." And so, but of course, it was a private school. We didn't charge a lot, and I would always give people, parents, discounts if they would teach, what they knew, like whatever they
Yeah.
did, if they would come in and do it, then we'd give them a discount. So it wasn't a lucrative thing, but I really needed to, I chose to have my children. They weren't an accident. I chose all of them, and so I was not going to sacrifice them. No way.
Right,
And so,
right.
even though it meant, leaving a house of 2,500 square feet and living in a place with 1,500 with four boys, we did it, because it was important to me.
Absolutely.
But when I retired,
Absolutely.
I was volunteering at a radio station, and the director of the radio station said, "Athena, you need to do a radio show on education." And I said, "Okay, I will." And so in 2006, I started Education Now, and then NPR was denying global warming and supporting the Koch brothers. And I said, "I'm out of here." And so in 2010, I started doing these podcasts, and I was very happy because, my audience followed me, and because a lot of people really do care. It's just
Yes.
that, getting the information out there is so hard. So hard, Gay. But
It is. We
yeah.
don't have the same kind of money and resources and
No, we don't.
reach that these powerful billionaires have.
No, we don't. And but there are people who are working hard. Teachers are so undervalued. They're so undervalued, and like our firefighters here in California right now are being undermined by this joke for a leader in the White House. I don't even want to say his name. I cannot believe they put their life on the line. And many of them are prisoners, you know. We take them from the prison and we put them out on the firing line. And they, you know, what do they get, 50 cents a day or something? I mean, what a lack of appreciation for what people are giving.
Right.
It just blows my mind.
And the prison complex is no better than the education complex.
No.
In that sense, it's for profit, and many of them have not even been convicted of a crime. You know, they're still waiting their hearing or their trial. And
right.
The prison system is another example of for-profit slave labor, really. And,
right.
and the they're dipping down into the education system to feed that pipeline.
Right.
And this has got to be stopped.
Yes, it does need to be stopped. And they have proof that the judges were sending these kids, and they were, of course, never white kids, always kids of color, to prison,
right.
you know, for things that they were doing in school, you know, three strikes, you're out kind of thing. And, you know, it was like a school-to-prison pipeline. They even called it that.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. We see it here in Louisville, Kentucky in particular, because we have a very high urban population, a high minority population, and I think the statistics show that our students are disciplined, our students of color are disciplined or suspended 4 to 5 times more frequently than our white students because of behaviors maybe perceived differently because of the color of skin. Like, we have inherent bias that we don't even recognize because we haven't been taught to recognize it. And so, and the rules are subjective, and it needs to be something that we speak openly about. That's the other thing, too, is we have a big divide. There are people who won't talk about race. They think by talking about race, you're being racist. And even speaking of our president, he made some comments the other day during his press conference that indicated that just by simply bringing up race, somebody was being racist. And that's absolutely not the truth. We can't turn our back on racial issues and then hope that they go away, because they won't go away, because they're built in, they're baked in to our systems and to our policies and into our biases. And so until we talk about it, we'll never be able to address it. And that creates a divide here in Kentucky, because there is such a disparity between our urban districts and our rural districts. Our rural districts are very white. And whenever I bring up race, I usually get shut down. People think I'm being divisive when I'm really trying to be informative.
You know, they're probably white people who watch Fox News.
They are.
You know,
yes,
which
indeed.
Is a megaphone for Trump and company. And, you
yes,
know,
it is.
It's the megaphone. And the thing is that Fox News isn't an American outlet. It's from Australia.
That's crazy.
You know, the owner is from Australia, and he is this right-wing idiot who, you know, it is just, it's so sad that people do not realize, his supporters do not realize that
they're being manipulated.
They're being manipulated, yes. And that's really sad. And then whenever he, you know, his dog whistle, then these racists that, you know, out there go and do the most atrocious things. And, you know, three of these reporters that, you know, this criminal in the White House put down were all women, and were all black. They were all women of color. So, you know, how they can see that and not realize that they're being manipulated, or maybe they just don't want to believe it, you know, I don't know. And then
I think they feel threatened. White people feel threatened, because I love the quote, when you're used to privilege, equality feels like oppression. And we have to recognize that we do feel threatened when we're asked to share the sidewalk, and we need to get over that. You know, it's the right thing to do.
Yes, it definitely is the right thing to do. Well, again, I want to bring up Diane Ravitch and encourage everyone to check out Diane Ravitch on the web and her blog. She does a lot of writing about this subject, and I want to encourage everyone. I want to give out your contact information, which is moderator@saveourschoolsky.org. That's moderator@saveourschoolskentucky, or just ky.org. Is that right?
That is correct. Thank you for sharing that.
And that Save, I want to tell everyone, Save Our Schools Kentucky is a grassroots stakeholder advocacy group that seeks to raise awareness of impending actions and legislation that could harm our public schools. Just a wonderful statement, you know. Now, I put some links into the promotion that will go out when I let everyone know about this interview. ALEC in Education is one of the links. Charter Schools in the United States is another link. Charter School Success is another link. And then I added the Badass Teachers Association, because those 500,000 teachers are so committed to informing the public and to knowing everything that they can. All of this that's happening with this in immigration and the tent cities, you know, the concentration camps that this administration has set up, and it's child abuse. And those badass teachers agree that it is child abuse, and now there was an article from the ACLU about how ICE says that it's not responsible for any kind of abuse that's happening with these people when they're under their, that they're responsible for. They're not responsible for any abuse. I mean, what?
Wow. Yeah. Then who is?
Yeah, then who is? Really? I mean, how can people buy that? Gay, I just don't know. Well, and I also want people to know that about Gay's education. She graduated from the University of Texas at Arlington in the class of 1987, and she got her degree in psychology and marketing. Is that right?
Advertising and psychology. Close enough. Yep.
Advertising and psychology. And her work is LBI Buzz, Marketing Maniac. which she started in February 2013 to the present, and a Beach Haven, New Jersey comprehensive marketing firm specializing in WordPress websites, domain registration, hosting, search engine optimization, social media management, and more. Her clients include Jersey Shore Beach and Boat Fishing Tournament and Reclaim the Bay, Ocean of Skincare, and volunteer for several organizations, including the Academy and Shawnee, Challenger Learning Center Louisiana, and 18 nonprofits in Passport to LBI. Now, what is LBI?
Okay, so LBI stands for Long Beach Island. So before I moved to Kentucky, that's where we lived, is Long Beach Island, New Jersey. And that's where I started building up my nonprofit client base. So that information is a little bit out of date, but it's still very much relevant to what I do. I'm still doing the same type of work here in Kentucky, and I've expanded into the print business. And so printing and apparel, logoed apparel, is something that we do as a way to fund our passion projects, if you will. So if you know anybody that needs any low cost in-house print work done, please let me give them a quote. I'd love to help.
Great. So, you know, yeah, I hope everybody heard that. And and anyone that's listening will get in touch with you. Now, then the websites for Save Our Schools is http. www.saveourschoolskentucky.org SaveOurSchoolsKY.org. I think I said that before. And Save Our Schools Kentucky has a Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and you just put in there Save Our Schools Kentucky, it will come up. And I think you said you have over 3,000.
I think we do now. A little quick Betsy DeVos story. When we first started the organization, I just wanted to join whoever was already doing this work. And after scouring the internet, I never could find anyone in this space. So we did some research and saw what was happening in other states. And the Save Our Schools brand was pretty prevalent in a lot of different states. So we kind of mimicked what we saw going on in New Jersey. The Save Our Schools New Jersey gave us the inspiration and support to really start something here in Kentucky. And even after we got it started, I think we had been around for several months and we maybe had 80 followers on Facebook. And then when Betsy DeVos had her confirmation hearings, I think that's when the majority of people in Kentucky started paying attention to the threats that were coming down the pike. And our followers on Facebook went from 80 to 800, like overnight.
Wow.
And that was before the last two legislative sessions. So since then, we've grown to over 3,000 just because people are paying attention to the charter school push. And then there's another push to basically vouchers. They're trying to get scholarship tax credits. And then to fund, they're looking for a permanent funding mechanism for their charter schools. So nobody wants money taken from their already underfunded public schools. And the more people become aware that that's exactly what charter schools and scholarship tax credits are designed to do, the more people start following our work. So we welcome more people paying attention every day.
Yes, I perhaps if people realize that Alec is opposed to, you know, looks at Social Security and disability as a, you know, as an entitlement, you know, even though we put money into it, you know.
Right. Same thing with pensions. You know, our teachers have paid for these pensions and they're trying to dismantle them too. And our teachers don't get Social Security here. So if they dismantle their pensions, they have absolutely nothing for their retirement. It's insane.
It is. It is totally insane. Just people.
Cruel.
People. Cruel and inhuman behavior. And it's being fostered and supported by those who are Trump and company that in the White House right now. And I just hope that this great awakening and this wave just sweeps over our country and brings us back to civility. And love, you know, which is the promise of our Constitution and our democracy, that it won't be let down, you know. Don't let us down now. Please, everyone, listen. I want to let everyone to know that they can listen and download free anytime at the website. And to please join us on the Education Now Facebook page to leave comments and join the conversation. And that Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. I do want to say something else about the tests before we go that I wanted to mention. You know, the tests are really so irrelevant. A teacher can assess the students. A teacher follows the child and knows what they're doing. A teacher is the person who should assess, not a test. But these also with textbooks, you know, people used to use original sources. Where they would go to the original source and they would say, okay, now we're going to do history, and they would go to original sources of persons who lived the history, who had written about the history. Then the textbook companies like Houghton Mifflin and I can't remember the name of the other one, they start writing these textbooks. And of course, they leave out of them anything that they don't want to. You have to go to people's history of the United States and people's history of the world if you want to know what really came down. But you know, they don't use that. And so they wrote the textbooks, and then these are the same people that did the tests. So they make money from the textbooks, and then they make money from the tests. And I want you to know that the Bushes, both Papa and son G.W., they make money because they're the chief investors in these textbook companies and these tests. So I just wanted to get that out there. And if anybody wants any proof of that, please contact me. Let me know on the Facebook page, you know, and I will definitely, you know, put that information in there. So Education Now, did I say this, is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And Education Now is a proud supporter of the American Montessori Society and their website, which is www.amshq.org. So is there anything you want to leave us with, Gay, any wisdom or, you know, anything else you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
You know, I just think that it's important to consider the source when you're talking with people who are either pro-charter or anti-charter, or I don't even like the term anti-charter, because as you mentioned earlier, there are good charters out there. I'm anti-privatization and I'm anti-predatory practices that take advantage of our most vulnerable populations with their privatization agenda. And so, you know, there are a lot of people that have opinions that are on the other side of the coin, but if you look at where they get their funding, if you look at who is behind their organizations, that's really where you can do some investigation and get to the truth. And groups like ours, Diverse Schools Kentucky, we're a nonprofit, but we're 100% volunteer. We're self-funded. The things that we do, you know, we probably spent a total of $2,000 this last legislative session. So everything we try to do is you know, low cost, because we're funding it out of our own pockets. And you look at these other organizations that are funded by the Koch brothers or Americans for Prosperity or State Policy Network. They've got full-time bloggers that look like they're grassroots, but they're really not. They're what we call AstroTurf groups, because they are funded by they are funded by people that are trying to push an agenda.
And it was Alec that did that, that really did the AstroTurf. And I was so I was so upset when they did AstroTurf in Palo Alto. I'm in this community that was so committed to the environment, to see this AstroTurf that just smelled so bad, and to see the kids who played on it, you know, with, you know, like, you know, just wheezing because of the gas that it was giving off. It was just terrible. I also want to say
it's not a balanced story. You have to know that there really is a right answer and a wrong answer to this equation.
Right. You said really something that made me think. I really want to clarify something when you said that, you know, it's not all charter schools. Well, I do want to say that although there are these little small charter schools that were started by teachers and parents are really great, but the thing that I don't like is that they have to do the testing.
Yeah.
And because they're part of the public school, so they have to do the testing.
Right.
And so, you know, for me, that goes against Montessori. I mean, if you're going to call yourself a Montessori school and then you're going to test, you're not really following the child.
Right.
And the teacher's making the assessment. And so, you know, I have a son who teaches in a Montessori charter with a kind that, you know, that was originally intended. But he and I argue about this because, you know, I tell him, you know, I just do not think that Montessori would approve. I just do not think that she would approve of testing these children, you know, instead of making the assessment yourself, you know, and using original sources, using these stupid textbooks. So, you know, I wanted to tell you that. So,
well, absolutely. And, you know, the tests are not used to guide instruction. That's another reason we know that they're not meaningful. And in my son's school, what I witnessed is if you don't do well on the first test, then there's more test prep and there's more testing. So more and more meaningful instruction is removed from that child's schedule when these are the children that need meaningful instruction more than anyone. You know, so it's counterproductive and harmful. It's abusive what we end up doing to our students because of what's at stake. If you don't do well on the test, if your school doesn't do well on the test, they shut you down.
Right.
So there's no way for you to actually do what's best for the child when the stakes are so high.
Right. Well, you know, it was my generation, the 60s generation, we did a lot of demonstrating about issues. And we got people out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And you know, that's when they made the decision that education, you know, was too good. We can't have well-educated children, and they can't have time because they have to have time. Then they're going to do this. So if they get an education, they have to get loans. And then when they get the loans, they've got to pay them off. So then they've got to go to work right away so that they don't have time. They don't have time.
Yes.
So, you know, wake up, America. See the writing on the wall.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Take back our democracy.
Take back our democracy. Well, thank you so much. I hate to let go. I just enjoy talking to you so very much.
Thank you, Athena. I really enjoyed it.
You're so knowledgeable, and you care so much, and it really comes through. So, Gay, thanks again, and I hope that we'll have a follow-up on this after, you know, after everything happens and you find out if you guys are going charter, we should do a follow-up.
Let's do, and hopefully we'll have some good news to report. I'm sure we will.
Oh, I really hope so. So I'll say goodbye to you, and I'll remind our listeners to, in the words of Maria Montessori, follow the child. Bye-bye,
awesome.
Gay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you love.